art, comedy, pop culture, and much more. You're listening to ACPN.
In the beginning,
you woke up this morning, got yourself gone. Mama always said you'd be the chosen one.
Hey, everybody, it is Podcast Rob.
James Hatton.
Big Matt.
And we are here, as you have heard, an episode of In the Beginning, where we talk about the pilot episode of a TV show. James, I'm sure we gave it away. What is the pilot episode we are talking about today?
Well, we're going to have a bit of cannoli, and Mom makes the sauce, and then a bit of the bafangul in the capicola. I'm not Italian. We're watching Sopranos.
He's picked up a little gabagool on the way, hey.
You talk Italian like you talk about cars and sports.
And I'm about as knowledgeable in them. I might be more knowledgeable in Italian, if only because we live in New Jersey.
That's, yeah, probably fair.
My template for the Italian type is Steve Martin from My Blue Heaven.
Oh, my God.
I was gonna say, before we started, I wanted to ask you guys, since you're both from New Jersey, is this everyday life for you guys?
Can we address, all right, look, I'm gonna let the cat out of this bag. See, before we get into whether we enjoyed this show or didn't enjoy this show and what we do, this show took me a long time to try, because not only is this every goddamn New Jersey stereotype that I had heard up through high school, right after high school, because this came out right as I was graduating, the stereotypes, like, they ultra'd. They went super stereotype. Like, if you had a friend who was little Italian and he wore the cross and he had a little bit of a Brooklyn because of his family or what have you, now, Maron, fuck off. Everyone just fuck off.
Yeah, it was the black guinea tees and the black and white breakaway fucking basketball sweatpants, and the accent just got completely turned up. I mean, for me personally, no, this is not everyday life. No. Do I have friends and acquaintances for which this is every weekend life? It's fairly close, like, I'm not going to lie.
And at the time, there was quite a bit of family crime in New Jersey. I can't speak to how much there is now. Don't at me.
You probably shouldn't. So.
And exactly.
Yeah.
So it was around, and then the show sort of made a central focus on it. I don't think without this show, we would have had things like The Real Housewives of New Jersey. I think this show, from a cultural standpoint, had its ups and downs. From a television standpoint, all the ups. From a cultural standpoint, next question, Senator.
Didn't we get the Being Gaudy or something like that show from this? Oh. Basically, I never watched it, but wasn't that the same, like, right after this?
Growing Up Gaudy, yeah, it came after that.
But
so, just, you know, we're gonna, before we get into it, since we're talking about this kind of stuff, I have to tell this story. Years and years and years and years and years ago, I used to work for an electronic retailer store whose name I won't mention. But for a long time, everybody believed that nobody beat them. And it was getting up to, like, just before the Black Friday season came in, and this guy comes in and wants to buy 7 compact computers and 7 monitors. Got a bonus from his job. He was buying computers for his whole family. Da 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 da. Like, Korean looking guy. And they look at the name on the credit card, and the name on the credit card is a decidedly not Korean name. Mm. So they go through the bullshit of, you know, the retail thing. Well, we just got, you know, it came up that we have to just call for a referral. So just give us a couple of minutes. We're gonna be on the phone. Da 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 da. Call the police. Everything else. Da da da. Cops show up like 4 minutes later with this very attractive, very slim, dripping in gold jewelry, Italian female, black hair down to her waist. she is up in this guy's face to the point where the cops are like 6 feet away, not even making eye contact with her. She's like, do you know who my father is? Do you know who the fuck I am? You know what's going to fucking happen to you in prison? It was one of the Bonanno crime family's daughters.
Wow.
They found her credit card. It fell out of her purse in the parking lot of the mall that we were attached to. And the guy was like, hey, look, a credit card. Let's go buy computers. Like, dude, the one day you decided to crime, you're fucked. Done. I mean,
you see that name on the card.
Yeah. The name on the card ends in a vowel. Put it the fuck back
down. Leave it alone.
That man's name.
Take the sleeve of your shirt, wipe your fucking fingerprints off of it.
Exactly.
Not only does nobody know this dude, nobody ever knew this dude.
No.
Like, not only did they get rid of him, but I'm sure, but they like went through history books and eliminated his history. He's just gone.
Yeah.
Who? Who's just gone?
Exactly. I don't even know where we are anymore.
Yeah. What we're talking about.
That said, we are starting off with episode one of The Sopranos in titled The Sopranos.
Or pilot, depending on where you got
it. It, which is funny because a lot of first episodes end up being named pilot.
It's weird. And none of them have to do with planes.
Yeah.
Except that one.
Well, the island one, yeah. It's, wasn't going to go there. Anyway.
Yes.
James, Matt, have you guys, like, was this a rewatch for you? Was this a first-time watch for you?
This is the first time for me. I've never seen a single episode of The Sopranos before. Hmm.
Not surprising, not living in New Jersey.
Well, I mean, it was, what?
I know.
Was it only, okay. It's a rewatch for me. I eventually went down that rabbit hole just to see what it was about. It's one of those things that I look at and I watched and I understand its cultural importance. I understand the good bits. I'm not as like in love with it as the world was. I'm sure part of that's stuff I've already ranted about, and I'm sure there's other bits we'll get to at the end of this. But no, this was a rewatch, so I did sort of recognize all the players and went, oh, they're all much younger now.
Yeah. Oh, hey, look at that. Yeah.
Well, they're still alive.
Yeah, well, some instances.
I'm trying to remember back because I haven't seen any of it since the finale. I don't really think I was a, hey, I have to catch every episode every week kind of thing when it came out. I think we caught most of the big ones and I kind of followed along on the storylines and stuff. But this was, yeah, I'll call it a rewatch. But that said, some of our criteria that we go through, did watching this first episode make you want to say, okay, well, I know what I'm doing for the next 3 weeks because now I'm going to rip through all the rest of the series?
Maybe.
Yeah.
For me. I'm still trying to get through Succession after we did that one. So.
Oh, wow.
I'm like just finishing up season two. I'm taking my time with it. It's an intense show.
It is.
I can't binge all of that in one day. I'll be depressed.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So I feel like, see, the problem is I've heard so much about this show. I know how it ends. I know the seasons in the middle weren't that good. Like, all of that stuff makes me not want to binge it. But just watching this episode, pretty fucking good. I enjoyed it.
And similarly, I have seen it. I'm not going to go back and watch it. But I will agree with Matt, this first episode, it really sets the stage. It really just gives you the players. You're intrigued about what's going on. What's the business like? The themes that, you know, of the young versus the old, the new generation, the old generation, keeping it secret, not keeping it secret. Everybody acts their balls off in this show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, but, yes.
But I will not be going and watching it again because, am I wrong?
Yeah, I don't know if it's because I've seen so much of it and, again, know how it ends. And we even talked about the finale of the show on the end. I don't know. Was it a good first episode? Yes. But it didn't grab me like the first episode of Succession or the first episode of Fringe where I was just like, oh, holy fuck, I have to know what happens the next 5 minutes after the camera stopped rolling. Like, it didn't pull me like that. And I don't know if part of it is because I know where things have gone from here, mm-hmm. or if it just didn't, I wasn't their target audience and it just didn't grab me the way it grabbed others.
I will say it didn't grab me the same way the other shows did that you mentioned, but it did leave me going, ah, that was pretty fun. I could see myself watching some more. It wasn't like Succession where I'm like, fuck, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
Yeah. This like you like, literally want to know what happened the next 30 seconds after the credits rolled. You're like, no, yes. no. I need to know what that next thing is. So the overall gist, we find Tony Soprano, who is a capo in the DeMeo crime family,
mm-hmm.
Is seeing a psychiatrist. Because he had a panic attack. And this is like a big no-no in the crime family world, going to see a psychiatrist, because secrets could possibly be spilled. And even though Tony does a very distinct job of trying to gloss around things that happened and people that he met and what they did, the psychiatrist, Dr. Melfi, basically tells him, look, unless you're telling me that there was a crime committed... Like, there's doctor-patient confidentiality, so, like, you can feel free to speak. But we know that Tony is keeping that from the rest of the family.
Yeah.
Why did he have the panic attack?
Well, if I can jump in on it.
Sure.
You kind of have to, like, if you look at the long run of the whole episode, it is, he had these ducks... And the ducks left, and then he had a panic attack. I'll stop doing that. But all metaphorical for his kids are growing up, and they're, you know, being a certain way. You know, they're getting ready to be humans, basically. His daughter's running around to go on trips, see boys, etc. The next generation of mobster is sort of planting their flag at the same time as the old generation won't shut the fuck up. It's a very, he recognizes he is the center, and there is just, he has to deal with all of these things, old, young, in the middle. And I find what one point, just real quick, since we were discussing that, you know, you don't go to therapy, the show does a good job of Tony ends up on Prozac. He's keeping it from everyone. But not a scene later do we have, who is it? Walnuts and Big Pussy?
Oh, yeah, Polly Walnuts, yeah.
Sitting there talking about, like, taking medications and stuff like that. There is a great bit where it sort of subliminally makes you go, everybody else is talking about this stuff and thinking about it and responding to mental health, but Tony can't because he's the Don and he doesn't want to show any weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't even think it's a matter of that he doesn't want to. Like, in that line of business, I don't think you can. Because that just puts a target on you.
But it also is the whole generational thing where men don't have feelings. And men yeah. don't talk about their feelings. Men don't cry. You know, and it's a little bit of that, too.
I agree.
Yep.
I agree with the ducks analogy that, you know... Because he tells Dr. Melfi that he's afraid of losing his family. I don't necessarily just think it's the kids are growing up part of
You're
it.
Right.
I think it's right. also the business that he's in, because part of that, the plot of that episode is his uncle, Uncle June, wants to put a hit on a guy who's basically kind of, you know, fallen off the way. And he wants to do it in this restaurant that they all frequent, and that Tony is a good friend of the guy who owns the restaurant. Mm-hmm. They went to school together. And he's trying to get Uncle June to not do the hit at this restaurant. So I think part of it is, yeah, I'm afraid of losing my family. There's a lot of different ways that can happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also something that's rolling around in his head.
And to add that, there's a lot of different definitions of the word family in built into that,
mm-hmm.
you know, position, family.
Family.
God damn it.
Damn it.
You were waiting.
Yeah.
I wasn't really.
I will say that I remember distinctly my favorite character in the entire show. And even on the rewatch, I was like, yep. He's 100% my favorite character is Christopher, Michael Imperioli.
Oh, yeah.
He plays such like a perfect definition of the young guy who wants to make his name, tries to do shit, tries to, and yes, he screws it up and occasionally makes money and he's family. Anyway, throughout this episode, I would say his acting is quite literally the most consistent, just sort of a vain, I'm going to do it my way. I don't want to talk about the business the way you do, Tony. I want to just fucking do the business. But I'm also worried about my car. He is excellent.
He definitely plays the, he's the embodiment of, do you know who the fuck I am?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, he's not in that spot yet, but he's near that spot. He's in the vicinity of that spot. So he likes the money and the attention and the power and the authority that kind of gives him, but he doesn't have any of the responsibility for it yet. And it completely shows. And he doesn't have any of the understanding of it either.
Yeah. It's like, he's like when Tony takes his car
and chases that guy down, he's like, oh, it's going to be fucking $3,000 to fix this headlight. Meanwhile, Tony's like, the fuck you want? Like, it's that scene alone was really cool, about seeing him in that fucking Lexus that he just bought, you know, flashy kid, all the chains and everything. He's almost like the son from Renfield without being a vampire.
Yes. Yes, he is. Because similarly, the other scene of note about Christopher is when Tony goes up to him after they've sort of suggested that his friend with the restaurant can go get the insurance money because the place conveniently blew up. Don't know how that might have happened. And Christopher goes, look, why am I doing this bullshit? I could go to Hollywood. And Tony, you can see, for the first time in the series, because not even when he's beating the crap out of that guy, like, real anger.
Yes.
As he grabs him by the scruff and says, how fucking dare you? You will not do that. You will not write screenplays. You will not go to Hollywood. Are you going to Henry hail me? And I was like, oh, I like that. That was very good. Because if you watch this, if you squint, you go, did Scorsese have anything to do with it? And not during this season. But yeah, that was my favorite Christopher scene by far.
The flip side of that coin, when he's berating Christopher about, don't you fucking dare think about going to Hollywood and telling your story and spilling your guts, is another reason why he can't tell anybody that he's in therapy.
Yeah.
Because that's effectively what he's doing in that therapist's office.
Spilling his guts.
Exactly. True. So it's almost a projection there, you know, when he's getting angry at Christopher about it.
I just say, like, Gandolfini just is amazing. I don't think enough people appreciate how good he was. You know, from this and other things I saw him in, he became Tony Soprano, and everything else he was in, he became Tony Soprano.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of other stuff that he's in, and it's not easy to separate the two, because unfortunately, I don't know if it was by design in those other scripts or where the scripts were taking place, but it was very easy to hear that kind of New York mafioso accent come from him in other movies that he was in.
Mm-hmm. True Romance being one that I loved, by the way. And he was awesome in that. Yeah.
He was in The Castle, which was great. Him and Robert Redford. He was in The Fallen with Denzel Washington playing a cop, and it was the same thing. Like, when he kind of gets smarmy and he kind of gets a little shady, like, that accent starts slipping out a little bit.
Little Tony comes out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and not Little Tony.
Little Tony stays away, but
his career, I mean, up until that point, he was just sort of a little, he was a character actor. He was just a guy you saw in A Thing at a Time. He had only acted for about 10 years. And I would argue that nobody really, maybe you knew his name because you know movies and you know actors, and isn't that the guy from The Thing? I mean, this put him beyond on the map. He won an Emmy for this role, and he didn't want for anything after this. And sadly, he's passed, but everything I've read about him, including one of the trivia notes about the show in general, apparently one of the nicest motherfuckers in the universe.
That's what I've heard as well from people who've met him and worked with him. They're just like, he was a lovely human being.
Yeah. There's a spot in there about how there was, they were going for their renewal and there was payments and there was issues about people making money. And there was some, I guess, dispute, and he he gave everybody in the cast an extra 30 G's just so they could keep making the show and keep going and not bat an eye. Like, dude. Now, of course, by then he's, I'm sure, making another figure.
Yeah.
But it's just, he is missed because after this, I really enjoyed seeing him in things. But yeah, he was very much, now he's the Tony Soprano guy. And there is a Tony Soprano type because of the show.
Yep. No, I agree. And by all accounts, too, he was, I don't want to say a polar opposite to the character that he played, but like where Tony was, could be very loud and boisterous and bluster. Like every account that I've ever read or interviews that I've seen, he was very kind of like you said, not very, not only very friendly and amenable, but also very kind of like, you know, quiet and low key. And it wasn't his type of character, or it wasn't a reflection of him as a character, I should say.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the reasons why they ended up picking him, from what I read. There was somebody else that they were originally considering.
Was it Chris Pratt?
No.
I mean, his Italian accent is impeccable.
Michael Rispoli, who has done... He was in The Rum Diary. He was in Kick-Ass While You Were Sleeping. But from the stuff that I read, they were both good at the likable and lighthearted part of Tony Soprano. But when he needed to get like dark and angry, he just couldn't do it the same as Gandolfini did. Like Gandolfini just was on another level.
Yeah.
And I think that whole scene at the barbecue with Christopher, where he fucking grabs him and pins him up, I think that's kind of emblematic of the way he could play both sides of that coin really well.
And on a dime, like he's laughing at the barbecue and then just right into Christopher. And that pops up tons of times.
Yeah.
He really goes through the whole range of emotion. He tells his wife that he's on Prozac, and you know, you can see, for as much as I find Edie Falco sort of annoying, I think that's generally her makeup for this show. She's supposed to be sort of the naggy traditional wife, Italian mobster wife, the same way that what's her face Melfi was in Goodfellas.
All hate mail can be sent to somethingsomethingcast@gmail.com.
Perfectly fine. But he's about to say, I got something to admit to you. And you can see on Tony's face as she goes and preps her wine to throw in his face. He goes from, I'm trying to be earnest with you, to, oh, now you're just pissing me off, but I'm still going to be earnest with you. And then he keeps all of those emotions on his face.
She's the Italian housewife who knows what she's gotten involved in.
Yes.
She knows that he has girls on the side. She knows that there's business stuff going on that she doesn't want to know about and that he's not going to tell her about.
But she also has a guy on the side too, right?
When she takes that wine glass and just slides it to the other side of the table and holds onto it, he's like, what the fuck are you doing? Oh, I'm getting ready to throw it in your fucking face.
Right.
Because she thought he was going to say, hey, I'm having another affair.
Yeah. We're going through, and it's so clear that we're doing this again.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. That when he does say, hey, I'm on Prozac, she flips the script and goes completely, oh my God, that's fantastic. And then he's like, don't stop fucking making such a big deal about this. Like, right. This isn't supposed to be a ticker tape parade and, you know, you being happy and screaming in the restaurant, oh my God, yes, my husband's on Prozac. Like, fucking keep it down.
Yeah. That is something I didn't miss that, right? They're both having affairs. It's just, and it's accepted pretty much. You
don't really know if she is or not at this point.
She's banging the priest.
Well,
maybe.
I'll speak to this because this is actually, it leads to my sort of big final point about just sort of the reason I don't find Sopranos as a whole something I ever want to dive back into. She is not having an affair with the priest, but she gets to the line and then it stops because her husband's Tony Soprano. And multiple times in multiple things with multiple subplots, there are sequences where it feels like the characters get to a certain point and then Tony gets involved and that subplot goes away. Like, there's not a lot of finality to a lot of the subplots of the show, I feel. She has one of my favorite characters in the whole series is this other guy, Fiorio, who comes from Italy and is her, he's Tony's bodyguard for a time. And she gets real close with him. And then, like, the beginning of the new season starts and, like, I sent Fiorio to Italy. And then you never hear from Fiorio.
Again. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember that.
I find that happens a lot in this show, generally, where the subplots sort of, you're very involved, and then they're gone, because, like, the writer didn't feel like writing them that day. I think Sopranos... Well, go ahead. Oh, please, take that.
I mean, don't forget, a lot of people got fucking recognized and known from this TV show, too.
Sure.
So, a lot of these people who may have been bit characters who suddenly became slightly more than bit characters, all of a sudden they're getting these other offers... And if they're not contracted as a series regular and they're just coming on every now and then, oh, but I got this deal to do this other thing. Well, now we got to write them out of our show. I mean, I'm sure, yeah. I'm fairly sure that that happens in TV shows on a fairly regular basis.
Mr. Echo.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And Lucia.
Yep. But to the point,
God, the show, that was not my
I can't leave us alone.
We have to go back.
No. I find this show to be important as like a fixed moment in television time. For as much as cable had landed and was the regular thing, like this is the first show that got an Emmy from HBO, which says something now that, you know, we're beyond that into the first show that got Emmy from streaming. After this, there was Oz and Rome and 6 Feet Under. And
I was going to ask, was this the first big HBO show that kind of put them from the kind of channel that only the rich kids' parents had to something that, you know, was mainstream? Was this the big one?
I want to say, yeah. I mean, I think by the point in time this came out, HBO had shows before. But this one really felt like, and they had probably had some, and they did have original movies and some documentaries. They had boxing. But I think this was the first landmark television show that they had, because it is only after this that, you know, all of those channels start throwing money at TV. Rob, do you recall it as such?
I'm trying to actually look it up.
Because it was, I really think that this show was the moment that HBO said, you know, we can do what NBC does. We can do what CBS does.
And this was 99, right?
97 to start.
So okay. Right. I found a fun fact here, but it's not about The Sopranos, unfortunately. It wasn't the first original series from HBO. But it probably did help in that time period of making it more of a, hey, this is a viable thing. Like these cable channels can have their own shows that are exclusive to them, not paid for, like, you know, not, it wasn't filmed by somebody else and we just bought it. Like HBO is funding the producing of it and everything. I think that helped set the tone for it.
Yeah,
I'm just looking for the what was the first HBO original series?
Well, I think that one's probably gonna be.
Anybody want to take a quick guess?
Ooh, first I'm gonna say Tracy Ullman Show.
Nope.
Oh, and wait, not necessarily the news.
Nope.
God damn.
And Oz was after this.
Yes. Down at Fraggle Rock.
Oh, it was Fraggle Rock. That's a good shout.
Wow.
I
Googled first big HBO series, and it was like, can you guess what the first original series was?
So yeah. I also Googled while you were doing that, and it seems that this was, again, not the first, but it is sort of hallmarked as the first serious, well-budgeted, well-considered one.
Sure.
There's been other ones. I mean, I listed four right there. So yeah, it's definitely a hallmark moment. Not like the cards.
And I think my favorite fun fact about this is that Jamie Lynn Sigler went into the audition thinking this was a show about church choirs. Like, she's done interviews where she's like, I had no idea this was like a mob mafia show. I thought this was a show about fucking singers.
So, final thoughts, Rob?
Again, hate mail, somethingsomethingcast@gmail.com. I'm going to give it like a 6. Like, it was good, but again, I don't know. I don't know why it's not drawing to me like, oh, fuck, I need to rewatch this again.
Yep.
Because like when we did the opening episode of Lost, like, I'm not going to lie, I felt the pull. I resisted it, but I felt the pull like, fuck, I remember what those first 3 or 4 seasons were like. I should go through and at least watch the first part of it. This was just like, this happens, this happens, this person dies, this person dies, this person dies, this is what happens, the screen goes black at the end. Yeah, I don't need to watch it anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I just kind of got that feel from it.
Matt?
I go just a little bit higher, 7 out of 10. You know, like I said, unlike some of the other shows where I'm like, fuck, what happens next? It's like, man, this is fun. Maybe I'll circle back and catch some on a rainy Saturday. But I think the thing is that keeps me from wanting to go more is that I know how it ends. And I know there were some seasons that were considered misses. Knowing all that stuff is like, I don't really want to invest time, but this episode was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, my one takeaway question is, were there any Italian stereotypes that they missed? I'm just kind of curious. I think they got them all, right?
I mean, the series did by and large. I think,
or not even Italian, like New Jersey Italian.
Yeah, it's specific.
It's very specific.
Very specific.
What the fuck are you trying to say?
You get it. You get it, man.
Over the course of the series, I'm sure they hit all of them. I think it's his sister becomes a very particular character whom you meet in places.
Oh yeah, one more question. Was this did this show result? Remember like the early 2000s infatuation with the whole Guido thing? Was that caused by this?
I'm gonna say not really. I almost feel that was more fucking Jersey Shore.
Right, but wasn't Jersey Shore kind of a product of this almost?
I don't know whether, you know, you're making a good point because, but that stereotype, the sort of Long Island Italian, which is the Jersey Shore Guido, mm-hmm. I know that existed when I was like a teenager because my brother had, you know, a sports car and would put on his Z Cavaricci's and he would go crew, you know, he'd go hang out on his car at the shore. You know, and then his best friend had like a giant purple fucking pickup truck. And like they would just scam on girls down the shore. So it existed before. I'm sure the popularity of Italian stereotype at the time helped Jersey Shore happen in the same way that I'm sure that like these people exist also helped Real Housewives and other shit like that, because we could say that you can immediately go, oh, she's a Sopranos type. Yes. And it was now like an archetype.
Okay.
Do you jive with that, Rob?
Yeah, I'm reading Guido on Wikipedia and it's hilarious.
Oh. I look forward to this.
Yeah. So the term is used in states and metropolitan areas associated with large Italian-American populations. It was a slang term and an ethnic slur referring to working-class urban Italian-Americans. It was popular in New York City, New Jersey, Connecticut, Buffalo, Chicago, Detroit, Ohio, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Boston, and Providence, Rhode Island.
Pittsburgh.
As well as areas of Canada.
Oh, I need to talk to my sister about Canadian Guidos.
MTV caused controversy in 2009 when they used the term in promotions for their reality television show, The Jersey Shore. This spurred objections from Italian-American organizations such as Unico National, the Order Sons of Italy in America, and internet watchdog organization Italian Aware. Although MTV removed the term from some promotions, it remains closely associated with the show, and some of the cast members use it regularly to describe themselves, while the females are often sometimes referred to themselves as Guidettes.
Of course.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like that answered that question.
The other, I mean, to kind of put a different pin in that, the other fun thing is that Gandolfini was getting anonymous phone calls after the first couple episodes of people telling him how he should behave in certain situations and how he should act in certain situations. There was an episode where like he was wearing shorts and like leather loafers at a barbecue. And he got a call like 11:30 one night, a couple nights later. And it was just like, mob bosses don't wear shorts. And he was like, I'm sorry, who is this? And it was just, but like he would get these random blocked number phone calls from these fucking mafia types, like giving him pointers on how to play a better role in it. And he was just like, okay, thank you very much.
It's no red tracksuits or nothing.
A lot of Adidas.
I thought the red tracksuits were Russian.
They are. They're very Russian. to give my final thoughts on it as well, like I have to agree. I think my bias comes from a different place, if only because, you know, I lived in upper middle class central Jersey. I don't like Frank Sinatra. Any girl I went on dates with that was Italian, I'd meet their family and then we wouldn't go on a second date. Like I have a lot of internal issues with that whole subgenre of this state. But the first episode was good, you know.
Way to circle back on that one.
Yeah. Thank you.
Get back to it.
I mean, you're not wrong. It was there were people who were influenced by it, and then there were people who felt like this was their opening to be more open about who they were as a person.
Yes.
And the people who were slightly influenced by it, you're like, yeah, okay, yeah, I get it. You can tell like certain situations, certain a little bit too much to drink. Everybody's laughing and making a little bit fun of too much. Everybody, you know, something comes out. But when the people were just like, you know, not that you shouldn't feel comfortable being who you are.
Of course.
But when people were just like, hey, I can fucking walk around all day now, fucking call. And like, you're just like, all right.
You know, my experiences Charles, in Jersey
let's
were a lot
tone it
different.
Back a bit. Okay. Like, exactly. Steven, let's reel it in a tiny bit.
I grew up in the 80s in Southern Jersey, and it was a lot different. Not at all.
Well,
like
yeah,
that.
I mean, Southern Jersey, you're just worried about your fucking horses.
we're getting lost in the Pineys.
I mean, I was 20 minutes north of Philadelphia, not that. I wasn't in the Pine Barrens.
All right, so not Colt's Neck. Not.
Jesus.
Topical Jersey humor here at the Something
Cast. The four of you who live in Jersey who listen to us are going to find this fucking episode hilarious.
Go read your Star Ledger. As a note, he picks up the Star Ledger, and I won't. There is a little part of me that's like, I know that newspaper. And that happens a lot in the show where they mention, you know, Jersey stuff. And you go, hey.
Or you see someplace and you're like, park? I know there.
Yeah.
There was they did one big scene seasons later, but they did a big scene in front of the fucking the merry-go-round at Garden State Plaza Mall.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just like, I fucking know that place. I went, I buy fucking pretzels at that Auntie M's.
Did they ever go to Action Park?
That was the last season. They're only mafia, dude. They're not invulnerable.
That's fair.
Traction Park. So, people out there in Something Land, what did you think of The Sopranos? What do you feel it was a cultural landmark, or do you also, much like me, hate Frank Sinatra? Hate mail can be sent to Something Something Cast. Rob, where can they tell us?
I don't want to tell them now. Because you don't run the social media platforms I do. You can go to somethingcast.com. The repository for all things something has all the buttons and widgets and doodads on where you can find all the different social media places that you can find us. 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more weeks.
You're
I know. It, like, me and Haddon had a really long Discord conversation while I was at work the other day, and it finally started hitting me, like,
yeah,
we're getting there.
Yeah, we are.
And Matt's like, I just got here.
I just started here.
Well, you'll have a room to yourself soon.
It's a short life.
He's gonna do the Timu knockoff. Hey, this is Big Matt, part of the something only stuff.
One something cast, not
part of something, something. Some stuff podcast.
Oh, I can't wait till our podcast is a Spirit Halloween.
Yeah. It's almost that time of year.
Oh, that was a good one. That was a good one.
Oh, I'm hitting Photoshop later today.
Oh, folks, until next time, I'm Podcast Rob.
I'm Dibsen.
And I'm Big Matt.
We'll see catch you next time.
With a blue moon in your eye.
Don't make me wet some guy.
Forget some things.
Just stop.
Something, 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 something.
Okay, here we go.